like to introduce now our panel moderator, Lisa Ryers. Lisa has expertise in architectural design and is also a member of Citizens Climate Lobby in San Francisco, as well as a certified electric coach with Rewiring America. And so come on up, and I'll invite our panel to come up as well.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for sticking it out towards the end of the day. I hope you've been getting some good information. I know just from what was just shared, I just want to remind everyone that this whole thing has been put on by Citizens Climate Lobby. So if you are interested in finding ways to actually contact the people who represent us and voice your concerns, Citizens Climate Lobby is a great way to do that. Mike mentioned, I'm a member of the San Francisco tribe, but the Alameda tribe is also happy to have you with us. And I also just wanted to make a plug for Rewiring America, where I've been acting in their electrification coach program for about 2 years. And what the electrification coach program is basically a 4-week course, which is free, and it's online, and it's basically designed to educate everyone on all of these devices of electrification, the ins and outs of all that, and best outcomes for working with contractors, and teaching you how to talk about electrification, because we don't want all of these conversations just to end here. So if that's something that you might be interested in participating with Rewiring America, come and get in touch with me after the panel. One of the things I like to call myself is an electrification doula, which is probably more understandable here in Berkeley. But the whole idea is that, we have a certain amount of technical expertise, but we're really here to make the job a lot easier on you. And first and foremost, to help you breathe. So with that in mind, we've got all of these wonderful experts and people who are electrification curious and enthusiasts, and we're going to talk about how the multifamily sphere is affected by electrification. We know that about 40% of Americans live in a multifamily environment. We want them to be part of this journey, so it's really important that renters and property owners also understand that this is for them as well. So what I'm going to have everyone do is talk a little bit on the idea of introducing yourselves and how you arrived on this electrification journey and how you talk about electrification with the people in your sphere. Dorothy, you want to start out?
Dorothy, and I am a renter. I've been in the same building in Oakland for 43 years, and I've had, I think it was about 3 years ago when we had an electric bill, a PG&E bill that was like $17,000 for the building, and it was ended up being about $600 a unit, and I have tried to have conversations with the landlord via emails and also the tenants around this time. And the tenants also wrote a letter to the landlord. And it wasn't received very well. The only change that the landlord has made is when new tenants move in, they put in a different heating system. What's it called? Electric resistance heating system, which, so that's what they've done, and I'm not sure how efficient that's been, but, and this is all new to me, and this has been very useful today, talking to different people, because helps me figure out how to discuss it with other people as well.
Do you want to just share that PG&E bill and show the graph that was actually that the PG&E bill was more affected by the gas side than the electric side?
Yeah,
underscore
that's
that?
True. Yeah.
Okay, great.
All right.
Hi, everyone. As I mentioned, Natalia, I work outreach for Bay Run programs. I do outreach for the Bay Area Multifamily Building Enhancement Program, so I talk to a lot of property owners regionally who are thinking about making that switch. And I think, you know, in my world, we're all pro-electrification, so I can be pretty biased and thinking of, like, this technology is super awesome, like, it's way better for the air that we breathe, it's healthier for us, it'll increase our comfort, it's super energy efficient, so... I love to kind of go on all of those like positives too, but I think a really important thing too is also to hear from our property owners and hear kind of those concerns about cost, about split incentive issues, about kind of the project management side of it too. So also just speaking with property owners and how can we kind of parcel out electrification so it's not this huge kind of project and we can start in processes. Normally I will do that and kind of suggest that we really look at insulation and building envelope upgrades for the building. I think when a building is kind of energy efficient in that building envelope side, then we're a little bit ready to take that next chunk into electrification. So trying to communicate it as a process, not something that you have to do all at once, but the earlier you start thinking about these switches, kind of the easier, it makes it easier, it makes that process easier. So. Yeah, I guess that's kind of how I talk about, or the main topics I talk about when discussing multifamily upgrades and electrification.
Thank you. Hi, everyone. I'm Alfred on the Berkeley Rent Stabilization Board, along with Commissioner Ida Martinak. We're both on the Climate Resilience and Habitability Committee. And we've been looking a lot at electrification and heat pumps over the last few years because in addition to the cost savings side of it, there's also the health and safety and habitability side of it. One of the best features of the heat pumps is that it can run in both directions and also provide cooling. And that's something we're starting to see places in Southern California take up. In Los Angeles County, they recently implemented a cooling ordinance. So right now in California, the law requires heat in all housing, but only some places require cooling. LA, they saw where things are headed, especially down there. And what they've done is a phased approach where there's certain timelines for different situations. So if it's a straightforward fix, it's got a shorter timeline. If there's a hardship involved, there's a slightly longer timeline. But the idea is to get all the buildings ready by the time the next stage of climate change really hits. And cooling is an issue even here in Berkeley, where even on a day where it's sunny and 70, 80 degrees, it can be really hot on the top floor apartments in a lot of older buildings. And there's yet another benefit where this comes in with habitability is where with humidity, because the air conditioning and heat pumps, they can also reduce the humidity, which can prevent mold problems, which can be a real hassle and really are one of the things that we're hearing more and more about as climate change makes the world more humid as well.
Thanks. Yeah, my name is Owen. I'm the owner of 1888 Heat Pumps. I got into this several years ago. I'm a local Berkeley High School grad. I really worked on solving the problems of home electrification and trying to find the best units possible for everybody and the best ways to solve those issues for homeowners. And now as we're growing, we're trying to tackle that same problem for multifamily. So in terms of electrification, that's the next problem we're trying to solve. And I will say one piece that we've recently been able to solve was over at a 48-unit low-income household in Richmond. We were able to put in 48 Merino units. And so Merino are these 120-volt plug-in wall units that are a lot simpler to install on their heat pumps. And so just kind of talking about some of the issues people had is, well, it's so expensive to run all these line sets and ductless units in people's homes, and they couldn't really afford it. And the value adds that they found with these newer technologies was, oh, we could plug these in as well. And so just finding solutions for multifamilies how I, and homeowners is how I think about electrification, because we refuse to do gas. So as a business model, we're not going to go that direction. So how do we solve the problem for everybody involved? And that's how we look at it.
Yeah, hi, my name is Beamer Sheridan. I'm a housing provider in Berkeley. And let's see, I think that I can trace my climate bug, well, as far back as the 90s, I was at Cal. I took an energy and resources group, like 100 intro survey class, and I learned about climate change then. There wasn't a whole lot going on then, so I had to kind of stuff that away. I did work in the solar industry. I was at Solar City for several years. We did big solar projects across the country. So I already had that kind of in my the back of my mind. But I think it was when I checked out the Channing Copper guys down on Acton and Channing. They moved since. But and checked out their stove and their whole thing. And they gave me a book, which I have in the other room. But basically, like, it kind of opened up my mind to kind of where we're headed and gave me some optimism. And I realized that last year, I think, California Independent System Operator published that we went about 160 days on 100% renewables. That's California grid, the whole grid. Yeah, which really blew my mind. And I realized if you're really nerdy and you know about the duck back problem, the only thing that's preventing us from bringing more solar online, because solar is the cheapest thing by far, is that we just have too much production during the day, peak supply, and not a way to really store all of that for like 6 to 7 hours to when we have peak demand, when everybody comes home and turns on their microwave ovens and TVs. So I think the excitement is the combination of, well, really, I think electric vehicles, when we have this next generation EVs that allow basically to use the energy stored in your electric vehicle to power your home. That's going to really unlock all that sort of excess capacity, so we can do 365 days. Like, you know, and hopefully that's in a few years. I mean, I think it's experts I've talked to, it's probably like not this EV, but maybe the next one. We're getting closer. Anyway, so it was the book I read with Shannon Copper. That kind of, you know, the bug bit me. I bought one of their stoves. It was kind of like the linchpin in my fourplex to not tip me over the edge as far as like using too much electricity. So anyway, I can go on and on, but I think that was kind of the source of my passion. And so I think one more thing I'd like to talk about to people is like getting off of gas is maybe more important than we think, because natural gas does not stay in the atmosphere nearly as long as carbon dioxide does, but it's a super potent global warming potential of like 1,000 or something crazy. So if we can get off of gas, it might buy us that time to kind of get the rest of the world, or really we're the rest of the world. The rest of the world's already on heat pumps. We're the remaining, you know, goobers. Anyway, so it's all to say, like, and we just actually got off of gas. It took PG&E like a year and a half to get around to it, but they came out and they dug up the main in the street, capped it, heard a big hissing sound, they plugged it up, they took out our meters and then capped, and, you know, took the line down underground, capped it, covered it up, and then drove off, and, you know, for free. So,
can we have a round of applause for Beamer, please?
Thank you, Andrew. I'm passing it on.
Hello, everyone. My name is Rich Chen. I'm with the Bay Area Air District, and a little bit of a late add to this panel because I think Lisa and Mike thought it was an opportunity for me to talk about upcoming regulations that hopefully people don't know about, but I can share a little bit about that affect the sale and installation of gas water heaters and gas furnaces that are coming up relatively soon. So in 2023, the Air District Board of Directors adopted regulations commonly referred to as 9.6 and 9.4, which the Air District actually has regulated nitrogen oxides emissions from residential water heaters and residential furnaces for decades. And they've been tightening the NOx nitrogen oxide standards from these devices over time. And for those that aren't familiar, nitrogen oxides or NOx are emitted when gas appliances combust natural gas
and those emissions to the exterior, to the outside of the building, form in the atmosphere, and when the sun hits it, it creates ozone and also particulate matter, which are, you know, known health impacts to humans in breathing and cause respiratory illness. Fun fact is that the total NOx emissions from residential water heaters and furnaces exceeds the NOx emissions from all the passenger vehicles and fuel refining facilities in the Bay Area. So it's a big source of NOx emissions. That's why the Air District cares about it. We've been tightening NOx standards for decades. In 2023, the board set it to zero. And shorthand for that is that no more natural gas water heaters and furnaces. And the way that the regulation works is that it prohibits the sale or installation of those appliances when the rules were, the amendments were adopted in 2023, they had forward-looking implementation dates because the board and the agency knew that this was a really big change. So the decision was made in 2023, and the first implementation date will be January 2027, and that's for residential-scale water heaters. The start date for furnaces was January 2029, and then there's another category of water heaters, which are like very large water heaters and boilers with an implementation date of 2031. So we have these future-looking dates, and that gave us time to learn more about implementation challenges, solutions. Is the market ready? What's going on with rebates and incentives? What new technologies are coming online to make things easier? And so we've gone through a lot of stakeholder engagement and planning, and as we get closer to that first implementation date, currently the board is considering some amendments to those 2023 amendments that would introduce some flexibilities. So if you're a low income, you could basically apply for and get an exemption because the cost is higher, right? If you have a very challenging installation or you need an electric panel upgrade, you could apply for and get an exemption because those really drive up the cost and complexity of doing these things. So that's kind of where things are at right now. There's a set of proposals in front of the board of directors, essentially, with a meeting of the board of directors set for May 6th. And so the board will get these recommendations from staff and hopefully deliberate and give us direction on what are the final set of amendments that we need to make so we can start implementing these rules as soon as possible. Given that some changes are coming, probably the January 2027 date for small water heaters is likely to get pushed back so we can figure out how to administer a new compliance program. So I'll pause there and want to hear from other people as well. Thanks.
Rachel, I'm just going to do some myth busting while you have the mic there.
Okay,
so let's say that these rules go into effect. Can I go to Stockton and buy a gas water heater? I live in Berkeley. Can I go to Stockton and buy a gas water heater and install it in my home or a multifamily unit?
Technically, no, right? Because the way the rule is written is that, well, obviously, like, if you decide to do that, and I'll be completely honest, I assume there will be some of that happening, right? It's a long drive. And if you decide you want to make that drive to go get yourself a gas water heater, no one's going to stop you. But the way the rule is written is that those non-compliant equipment, the gas water heater, the gas furnace, are legally not to be sold or installed within the Bay Area. So that we're relying on that as sort of like that's the rule of the letter of the law, if you will. And we know that there will be people that really don't want to do that and want to drive a couple hundred miles or whatever to go get themselves a gas water heater. There will be leakage, and I think even with the exemptions, there's going to be, you know, people will want to game the system or whatever. And I think enforcement is going to be tough because these used to be point of sale regulations on the ultra low NOx standard. So all of the equipment manufacturers,
that are sending equipment to suppliers, to distributors, to the retailers in the Bay Area are very aware of the Air District's regulations on these equipment. When it goes to zero NOx, obviously that needs to be an electric heat pump probably, right? But now that we're into kind of case-by-case exemptions, it gets a lot more complicated. So we're in the process of figuring out, based on the direction we ultimately want to get from the board, like what are the exemptions. We'll have to figure out the whole implementation and compliance regime to make it as easy as possible, prevent people from trying to game the system to the extent possible with our limited resources to really do heavy policing of like how it all works.
So just to underscore, there is the verb install also as part of this equation, not just purchase, but install.
Absolutely.
And if you're doing permitted work, then it's going to be obvious what's happening to an inspector.
Correct.
Okay, second myth-busting question I have for you is, let's say I have a gas furnace in my home. On January 1st, if this goes into action, do I have to get rid of it on January 1st?
Absolutely not. So there are time of replacement requirements, basically. As I said earlier, it's those non-compliant devices cannot be sold or installed in the Bay Area, depending on whenever those implementation dates start. But once the implementation date starts, you can use your existing equipment until it fails, or you would need to, you know, meet the standard when it's time to replace your existing equipment. So it's not go out and rip everything out that's currently working or whatever. It's just when eventually that time comes, you need, and hopefully the market will be completely, you know, it'll be normalized by then. So I like to use the example of if you wanted to really, you know, kind of get around this, go out and install brand new gas equipment in your building on December 31st, 2026 or whatever, and you'll be good for 15, 20 years, right? That's kind of how it works. But obviously, I want to emphasize, like, repairing is okay too. And I think avoiding a situation when you're caught off guard with an unplanned failure is not fun, right? Trying to figure this out when you're in an emergency situation, especially hot water. So thinking about it in advance as much as possible, like how old is your equipment? Do you have the necessary power next to your, wherever your water heater is, because you might have to put in power for your heat pump? What are the space issues? Do a little shopping. Maybe call a contractor, you know, kind of do a little, so you're just like a little bit more prepared. Okay. And I want to hear from the other panelists as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we'll just come on back down the pike here with Bhima, and then we'll be open to questions. So Bhima, from kind of our emails, you do not seem like the typical multifamily property owner in terms of all of your forward thinking on making these adaptations, just, not necessarily, you know, code required, et cetera. So I just want you to share to the people kind of some line items of the modifications you've made and what some of the benefits you've seen from those modifications.
Sure. Thanks, Lisa. So I'd say I mentioned one. We know Berkeley's own Copper, I guess they're calling themselves now, Chaney Copper Company. They make a great hybrid battery electric induction range. It's a little pricey, but if you consider kind of what you're avoiding, in my case, I had a fourplex, and not to get too far into the weeds about how you do calcs for, you know, for loads. At the end of the day, the city actually didn't ask me for calcs, but in case they did, I was concerned, you know, that I'd be over the limit for the main panel, and I didn't want to upgrade that, in part because, well, thanks PG&E, they put their gas meters in right underneath the electric meters, and now they won't let you do that anymore, and they won't let you upgrade your electric main if it's near the gas meters. So I had that whole, like, chicken egg problem. So the Chaney Copper range
They just show up, they take your old gas range out, cap the gas line, and almost all gas ranges, unless it's like a Wedgewood or Okeefe and Merritt, they're all like 30 inch, and they have a plug for the gas range or the igniters, and you just plug it in, put in there, and it's programmable. It's great. So when you consider like what it would have cost me to upgrade my main and run a 40 amp circuit all the way from the front all the way to the back unit, it was worth it to me. What else? I had a basement unit that had hydronic heating in the floor. I didn't want to lose that. So it's a little bit obscure. It's getting less obscure now, but they do make heat pumps, air-to-water heat pumps. They just make a bunch of hot water. They sit outside. Most heat pumps now, they run coolant, into your house. These stay outside, and all the coolant is in the outdoor unit, so much less likely to leak. And so it just runs a big loop of hot water, and you can use it for domestic, you can use it for heating. They're super efficient. Downside is it's more expensive, but I have like four different levels, and so it ended up making sense because the heat, I'm paying for the heat in the basement, but it all, we all know that heat rises, and so we don't usually have to turn the heat on in our unit because we're above, so that kind of made sense to me. It's fair, right? And at the end of the day, when I was looking at, we had like four tankless gas water heaters in a row, and a bunch of it was like insert like those ceramic log things were horrible, like we coughed when we turned them on. We got rid of basically seven gas burning appliances with one heat pump, which is pretty cool. So it was about half the capital expenditure up front. I mean, it meant that I was basically paying for hot water for the whole building, and heating for other units, but I was paying some of that anyway, and so it just made sense to me. I mean, at the end of the day, there's nothing left on a dead planet. So like when the number crunching is a little bit ridiculous when you're like, okay, we're what's our future like, right? The crux of the matter of like, by the time enough people realize that it's just getting hotter and hotter, it's gonna be too late. So when you factor that in, like it all kind of makes sense to me. So that was my approach, really. Honestly, I think that's really, nothing else is that sexy. I mean, like electric, dryers, like that's not that sexy, but I'm really excited for EVs to be able to be, backfed V2H and then V2G, vehicle to grid. Like it's going to be a game changer. It's probably like, next gen out there, but it's coming. So I'm excited about that. But I'll pass it on. Thanks.
Oh, and I was just going to ask you, as a technician, the challenges that you face in terms of a multifamily application versus a single family application, and some of the soft costs that might be involved as well.
Yeah, and I'll be super brief. One thing that we constantly come across for people who are multifamily owners is the cost of installing either mini splits in every single apartment or area, especially the second story, third story. It gets very costly from our standpoint. We have a lot of labor that we have to put into it, and there's a lot of time and scaffolding, et cetera. And it can get quite pricey very quickly. So like I mentioned before, there's several products that are coming out. One of them is Merino that just launched a couple weeks ago that we're partnered with. And so we put 48 of those in. And the difference between those and a mini split is there's no outdoor unit. It's just an indoor unit, and it's 120 volts. And it just plugs into, you just open up two holes on the wall, and then you're able to mount the unit on the indoor inside your wall. And it's long story short, it's a heat pump. It works very well in smaller spaces, and it's been a huge game changer in order to get access to these multifamilies and give people opportunities not to spend, three times or four times the price to put heat pumps in their multifamily. So that's been a big game changer. And then I think, now we're starting to work more with span panels so people don't have to upgrade their main panels. And, those can kind of modulate some of the circuits. And so that's like a step right before having to do a main panel upgrade, which is quite costly and takes a lot of time. So we generally look at, okay, can we rearrange circuits? Okay, yes, no. If not, can we do a panel swap and make a larger panel, right, that you're able to have more space for? And then the next escalation would be, can we get you a span panel for cheaper than what it would cost for a main panel upgrade, and a lot less time to do that pretty much the next day. So those are some of the things we've been looking at and problem solving for multifamily.
Okay, great. I think we probably need to pivot to questions. I obviously have. Okay, one, no pressure. It has to be the best question for the entire group.
I wanted to ask you, so how did you strike a deal with the landlord? I assume it was you were working with a landlord, not with a tenant.
In this case, it was a project ran by the city of Richmond, and they gave it to a developer to redo a Motel 8. But we've also worked with other multifamily owners of renters in San Francisco right now. And how did I strike a deal? I mean, they reach out to us and they want a quote or an estimate, and we provide both options. And, you know, instead of paying, you know, $65,000 for X amount of mini splits, they're paying, you know, $20,000 to $30,000, or, you know, roughly half to a third of the price for these Merino units. And they look at the cost analysis and they go, oh, yeah, I'm just going to go with the Merino for my tenants. And like I said, it heats and cools and heat pumps. So that's, you know, as simple as they've just reached out to us. We've done a site survey. We give them both options, and then they're, you know, they calculate. Okay, I don't want to spend this much, but I am willing to spend this much to provide heating and cooling for my tenants.
Just quickly, was this a matter of them paying for the energy, or the matter of the existing equipment kind of coming to its end?
That's a great question. For the one, not the developer, but more like the multifamily. You know, I actually didn't get too much into the weeds with him on the reasons why, but he was just very interested in upgrading his systems for his tenants, and so, you know, those are the options I gave him, and almost immediately he chose the cheaper option, but it still worked very well. So.
Thank you.
Yeah.
If you are interested in putting in, for example, a heat pump system, and one is kind of new to this technology. What organization can I talk to get more detailed information, that's kind of specific to our house, without talking directly to a heat pump provider at this time? Because I'm not sure how to evaluate who would be best. So is there a nonprofit I'm looking at? Is it
Natalie? Yeah. So Rewiring America is a national nonprofit that I work for, and that's what we do. We're electric coaches, and we are not trying to sell you anything. We're just here to talk to you about the products and how they might work in your home.
So in our very specific home, we can talk specifics.
Yeah, to some degree, for sure.
Okay.
We're not going to size a heat pump for you, but we're going to talk about the general pathways forward.
Okay,
thanks, everyone.